Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
To the Renaissance English History Podcast. I'm your host, Heather Tuskell, and I'm a storyteller who makes history accessible because I believe it's a pathway to understanding who we are, our place in the universe, and our connection to our own humanity. This is episode 73. It's another joint episode with Melita Thomas of Tudor Times on Elizabeth of York. Just a quick note that the Renaissance English History Podcast is a proud member of the Agora Podcast Network, which you can learn more about at agorapodcastnetwork.com. Remember, you can get more information, resources, and sign up for the mailing list, which gets you extra mini casts and all kinds of stuff at englandcast.com. There's a lot of great stuff going on there, like next week's free mini e-course called Inspiration from Kick-Ass Tudor Women. So go to englandcast.com to check it all out. Also, I'm coming up on 75 episodes, so I'm going to have a party on April the 7th, and it's going to be on Facebook Live. And so go to englandcast.com again to check that out. I'll be taking live questions or your questions that you send me in advance, so it's going to be super fun. And Hannah's going to be making an appearance there too, so we're both excited. So now let me introduce you to Melita. Melita Thomas is a co-founder and editor of Tudor Times, a website devoted to Tudor and Stuart history in the period from 1485 to 1625. You can find it at tudortimes.co.uk. Melita, who has always been fascinated by history ever since she saw the 1970s series Elizabeth R with Glenda Jackson, also contributes articles to BBC History Extra and Britain Magazine.
So, Melita, what is it that makes Elizabeth of York special? And tell us a little bit about who she was.
I still don't think that anybody has found that she was an enormously proactive or powerful individual politically, but she's certainly an interesting woman. She was right at the heart of the Wars of the Roses, and her influence over her husband and children is definitely there. It's just that she wasn't kind of noisy about it. So the other interesting information about her comes from her privy purse expenses, which were catalogued in the 19th century and give all sorts of information, unfortunately only about the last year of her life, but give a great picture of what it was like to be a late medieval queen, what she spent her money on, what she did with her time, and so forth. I think she's also been perhaps brought to the forefront by a renewed interest in the Wars of the Roses, because she was very much caught up in that as the daughter of Edward IV and Elizabeth Woodville and the sister of the princes in the Tower. So that was one of the reasons we wanted to look at her as person of the month. She does bridge that gap between the medieval period and the Tudor period. And it's interesting to think about how somebody's life, you know, obviously she was a member of the House of York, but she married the Lancastrian Henry VII, and you know, many people she felt she had a better right to the throne than he did, but she never seems to have, you know, thought of herself as a queen in her own right. I mean, most women wouldn't have done at the time. that she was very much admired in her own time, very, you know, greatly mourned when she died. And, you know, that I haven't come across a single negative word about her, actually. She's every account of her is very positive.
So you mentioned the renewed interest in her and the interest in the Wars of the Roses. And a certain historical fiction narrative author and TV series makes it seem like maybe she had a romance going on with a particular Yorkist king before Henry. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. I mean, this is a story that actually began in the reign of Richard III himself. So Richard III was her uncle. And there was a story that in early 1485, he was thinking of marrying his niece. Now, unsurprisingly, that gave rise to a good deal of gossip and unpleasant talk because, you know, uncles marrying nieces was not considered any nicer then than it is now. And Richard III publicly denied that he'd had any such idea at all. In the late 17th century, no, actually in the early 17th century, an antiquarian called George Buck claimed to have seen a letter written by Elizabeth to the Duke of Norfolk, Richard's friend, insinuating that she was in love with her uncle and wanted to marry him. But the letter itself, no one else has ever seen the letter, and the transcript of it was, it would appear, doctored by George Buck's grandson, another George Buck, who forged a number of letters. The Richard III Society has actually transcribed what appears to have been the first manuscript, and it doesn't, you know, it's capable of a number of interpretations. And personally, I wouldn't have said that the first thing that would leap to my mind would be that she wanted to marry her uncle, but, you know, that's one interpretation that's been made of it. The thing is, you know, perhaps she had a crush on her uncle, but he had claimed that her parents lived in adultery, that Elizabeth herself and her siblings were all illegitimate. He had taken the throne of her brother, and whatever happened to the princes in the tower, they disappeared whilst they were on Richard's watch. Personally, I think it was unlikely that she wanted to marry him, but hey, who knows? I wouldn't have thought most women in that circumstance would suddenly have a crush on him. But, you know, people stay with all sorts of people who are not necessarily ideal partners. But I would have thought that being called illegitimate and having your parents branded adulterers and your brother disappearing, you know, might put you off a bit.
Yeah, it might just a bit. But, interesting.
Yeah, no, it was certainly talked of at the time. But there we go.
Yeah, and if she was illegitimate anyway, it's not as if she would have provided Richard with any greater claim to anything if she was branded as illegitimate.
That's the tricky question because, you know, Richard claimed that his brother's marriage to Elizabeth Woodville was not valid. And there are people who have accepted that claim, both then and since. Legally, the validity of a marriage was a matter for the church courts, and there was never any public airing of the evidence that was supposed to exist, and there was never any church court pronunciation on it. So it was not more than an act of parliament passed by Richard. So I would have thought it unlikely that Elizabeth herself would have thought of her parents' marriage as invalid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it seems like there's, like you said, this Victorian idea about her. Like there's this stereotype of her that she was just this quiet wife who took care of the children and like she taught her children them. Like there's the idea that like she taught Henry how to write and she taught her children personally rather than sending them away, and that she was just this mother and this domestic person. What do you make of all of that? And can you talk a little bit about that?
I think that's probably true in the sense that was a great deal of family affection seems to have been an important facet of her character. She was very close to all of her sisters. She seems to have been attached to her mother and to her children. I think she comes across as a very affectionate and loving woman altogether, and fond of her cousins, her nephews and nieces, you know, just you know, actually a real family person. The idea that she taught her children, I don't know that there's any actual evidence of it. It's been identified as a possibility because of the similarity between her handwriting and that of Henry VIII's. And I think that was the basis. I think Dr. Starkey has hypothesized that Elizabeth did actually teach him. And it was certainly not impossible, though in the next generation, the humanists recommended that mothers should be the first tutors of their children. So it's certainly perfectly possible. She wouldn't have taught Arthur, who as Prince of Wales had his own tutors and his own household from a very early age. But she may well have taught the younger ones. The accounts show that, well, in fact, that both parents, both Elizabeth and Henry VII, took a good deal of interest in their children, in their music lessons, in their clothes, in, you know, just the general day-to-day parts of life. And her children didn't live with her. They partly because the royal household was, you know, tended to be centred at Westminster, which wasn't considered healthy for children. So her children were mostly at Eltham or at Greenwich or Sheen. And Elizabeth travelled quite frequently with Henry VII. They moved about the country a fair bit, and children, you know, it wasn't suitable for young children to be you know, dragged all over the country. But she visited them frequently, and they, you know, came to her. So she was probably closer to them than lots of medieval queens were.
And I realize we kind of skipped, like me asking you about Richard and everything like that. We just kind of skipped, and I have an assumption here that people will know about who she is. And I realize that's probably a bit remiss of me to skip over that. So can you tell me just a little bit about who she is and, just kind of her life story?
Yeah. Elizabeth was the oldest child of Edward IV and Elizabeth Woodville. She was born in 1466 in the Palace of Westminster, and her parents subsequently had another, I think, possibly a dozen children, of whom quite a few lived till adulthood. She was, for her first few years, she was her father's heir, because she only had sisters until 1471. But, you know, nobody ever thought of her as a potential queen. It was always assumed that Edward would go on to have sons, and he did. In her early youth, she was betrothed to the Dauphin of France as part of a treaty of Picquigny, I think it was, the Treaty of Picquigny between Edward IV and Louis of France. And it was arranged that when she was of marriageable age, which was anywhere after the age of 12, but probably more normally about 14, that she would go to France and become Queen of France. And she was known as Madame la Dauphine at court, and everybody assumed that she would one day be Queen of France. In 1482, about 6 months before he died, Edward IV was absolutely horrified, shocked, and, you know, people thought it actually led to a decline in his health, when Louis of France broke the marriage off. And effectively, Elizabeth was publicly jilted and humiliated. Not very nice for a young woman who was, by that time, nearly 18. So at that time, then there was talk of her marrying Henry, Earl of Richmond, as he was considered to be the last Lancastrian heir. But whether Edward IV really intended such a marriage to take place, I think it's fairly unlikely. He was more likely to be putting the idea forward to get Richmond into his hands, to have him, what should we say, out of harm's way. But it would appear that Richmond's mother, Margaret Beaufort, and Elizabeth's mother, Elizabeth Woodville, after Edward IV's death, did put their heads together and decide that a marriage between Elizabeth and Richmond would be the answer to the whole Lancaster-York conflict. And in fact, that is what happened. After Bosworth, Henry and Elizabeth were married in the January of 1486. They went on to have seven children, probably. There's talk of an eighth, but there's only real evidence of seven. She was crowned as queen in 1487 and was a remarkably popular and successful queen.
And she, of course, died giving birth after Prince Arthur had died, right? She wanted to have another child.
Yes, it's very sad. She had her first childbirth, possibly, it was probably a bit premature, but it may even be that that she and Henry had slept together before they were married. It's certainly possible. But Arthur was probably a bit early as well. And then she didn't have another child for nearly 3 years, which has led to people wondering if there was a miscarriage in between. Her second child was a daughter, Margaret, who became a Queen of Scotland. Then there was Henry, born in 1491, a little girl, Elizabeth, who lived for about 3 years, Mary, who became Queen of France, a little boy, Edmund, who lived about a year, born in 1499. It seems that Henry and Elizabeth may have stopped sleeping together after Edmund was born, because apparently she'd had a difficult pregnancy, and with three sons and at that time, three sons and two daughters, that they didn't need to have more children. But then Arthur died at the age of 15, and Elizabeth comforted her husband with the thought that they could still have more children, and she fell pregnant again, you know, within a few weeks, which is why I've assumed that, you know, they'd stopped sleeping together, because she hadn't been pregnant for a while. She had a reasonably healthy pregnancy, but not. She was well enough to travel and go on a progress, but she went into labour probably a little earlier than she was anticipating again, had a daughter, Catherine, but died when the baby was about 10 days old, and Elizabeth died on her 37th birthday, sadly. Henry and her children, they were absolutely distraught at Elizabeth's death.
I can imagine. And there's that really touching story about when they found out that Arthur died, that Henry kept it together while she, or one of them kept it together for the other one, and then lost it right away. And
That was it. When they married, it wasn't an arranged political marriage, but all of the evidence suggests that they became, you know, attached to each other. I mean, people didn't think of love in quite the way we do now. It was your duty to love your spouse, and, you know, people made as much of their marriages as they could, but they do seem to have been genuinely affectionate. They spent a lot of time together, and they comforted each other after Arthur's death.
What was it like for her? With the pretenders, like with particularly Perkin Warbeck, because so many people supported him, and I know there were political reasons behind that, but it must have been very difficult for her, wondering whether, this was her brother, and having loyalty to her husband. Like, can you talk a little bit about that?
It's one of those questions you just put in your mind, and you think she must have been hoping against hope that it was her brother in one way, but then absolutely terrified at the thought that it might be her brother, because how would she choose between her brother and her son? It's an impossible situation that you dread being in. The evidence suggests that Henry, from a fairly early on, was pretty sure it wasn't Richard of York. And although we don't know for certain that Elizabeth met Warbeck, she probably did. After the rebellion finally was crushed in 1497, Henry, having promised that Warbeck would be treated well if he gave himself up, he was a man of his word, and Warbeck was actually brought to court and lived in the court. So Elizabeth must have seen him. If she recognised him as her brother, she never said so. You'd have to think that if he was her brother, Henry would probably have kept them apart. But yeah, so she probably was, you know, when she first confronted him, assuming that she did, she must have been disappointed and relieved in equal measure, I guess. It's really hard to get your head around how you'd feel about that.
Yeah, on one hand, you'd want it to be, like you said, you'd want it to be your brother. But on the other hand, how do you choose then?
Yeah, well, interestingly, Warbeck's widow, wife, but then eventually widow, because Warbeck tried to escape from his very comfortable gilded cage and, you know, eventually was executed. But his wife, Lady Catherine Gordon, lived at the court, was one of Elizabeth's closest ladies-in-waiting and friends. So, it's all very odd when you think about it.
Court life then often seems to be very odd in ways that we...
Yes, it does. And the whole, everybody was so closely related to everybody else. And that, I mean, that's one of the things about the Wars of the Roses and the Tudor, and even the later Tudor period. Everybody is somebody's brother or sister or cousin or niece, or the tangle of loyalties must have been endlessly confusing.
Yeah. I was wondering about her relationship. We talked about this a little bit when we talked about Lady Margaret Beaufort, the idea of the stereotype sometimes about
the mother-in-law from hell.
Yeah. Can you talk to me a little bit about what her relationship was like with her mother-in-law?
Again, there's sort of conflicting evidence about that. There's a Spanish comment in one of the Spanish ambassador's letters saying that, you know, Elizabeth was severely overshadowed by her mother-in-law, and that Lady Margaret was, you know, dominated her, and that the Queen, not surprisingly, didn't much like that. If she didn't like Lady Margaret, then she must have lived a miserable life, because they were together very, very frequently, most of the time, certainly, you know, sort of the first 10 years of Henry's reign, when Margaret was often at court. After that, she took a slightly less prominent role, but she was certainly a very much more dominating force than Elizabeth seems to have been. However, you know, Margaret had been on good terms with Elizabeth's own mother, and you know, you have to hope they got on well. There's no evidence of any quarrels or ruptures between them. I mean, I should think that most women would have got a bit fed up with Margaret Beaufort's constant presence. But I'm not sure there was anything ever really, you know, unhappy between them. You know, I mean, it's like any mother-in-law that you get on with pretty well, I suppose, but just sometimes wish wasn't there. Yeah, I mean, Margaret Beaufort, you know, took a lot of interest in Elizabeth's children. But Elizabeth, as I said before, she was definitely a family woman. So, you know, perhaps that helped her to, you know, accommodate the situation. And again, in those times, people lived much more as part of an extended family, rather than the nuclear family that we would expect today, where your mother-in-law comes around, you know, for Sunday lunch occasionally. Mm-hmm.
Sure. And, you know, you talk about her being a family person. That was something else I wanted to ask you about. Just, she spent a lot of her early life being uprooted with the Wars of the Roses and spending time in sanctuary and, you know, kind of having a lot of uncertainty, I suppose, while at the same time being a princess and just kind of having this almost like bipolar kind of situation going on, seems like. So can we play pop psychology to that?
I think, well, that may well have made her very protective of her family. I mean, when she was about four, probably one of her earliest memories would have been going into sanctuary in 1471 when the Lancastrians landed. Edward IV was driven from his throne, and Elizabeth, her mother, took Elizabeth and her sisters into sanctuary at Westminster, and it was there that her brother Edward was born. So although she may not have remembered it clearly being about four, it was, you know, it's likely to have had an impression on her mind. Edward returned within the year, and from that point until his death, matters were fairly safe, the Lancastrians having apparently been completely defeated. But then there was the shock that I mentioned before, when she was no longer going to marry the Dauphin. So her view of her future as Queen of France was whisked away from
her.
And
why was that cut off?
Well, it was cut off. Personally, I have a sneaking suspicion that it was Louis taking his revenge, because before Edward IV admitted to being married to Elizabeth Woodville, who he married in secret. There had been long negotiations for him to marry Louis the XI's sister-in-law, Bonna of Savoy. Right. So Edward IV, you know, there were these negotiations going on. Louis the XI was imagining his sister-in-law going to be Queen of England. And suddenly the king announced that he was already secretly married. Mm-hmm. All very embarrassing and humiliating for Bonner of Savoy. So I have a sneaking suspicion that Louis was perhaps getting his own back. Mm. But the most straightforward reason was that he wanted his son, the Dauphin Charles, to marry Anne of Brittany. Mm. Anne of Brittany was the eldest child and daughter of the Duke of Brittany. She had no brothers and was likely to become Duchess of Brittany in her own right. Now, the French had been circling round Brittany for some time and wanted to snatch it, and which they did. So Charles was going to be married to Duchess Anne, and that was the ostensible reason for the jilting. But as I say, I should think Louis the XI was quite pleased to
have that reason. Get huh? back. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So sorry, we were going on about her life and
the insecurity. Yeah, yes. Yeah. So that's turned upside, and then her father dying, and the whole business of her parents' marriage being called into question, her brother crown being snatched from his head, and in the brothers disappearing, she must have not known what her future was going to be, because even after Elizabeth Woodville came to an accommodation with Richard III, and Elizabeth and her sisters left the sanctuary in Westminster Abbey, it was unclear what her future was going to be. She would have heard these stories about, you know, her uncle wanting to marry her, and you know, as we said before, we don't know what she actually thought about it. There was also talk of her marrying a Portuguese prince, or Manuel, but that came to nothing. And then at the Battle of Bosworth, you know, waiting to hear what was going to happen. You know, she didn't know who was going to win. She probably didn't know who she wanted to win. And then immediately after Henry VII's victory, although he had promised to marry her, it was several months before anything happened. So she was probably somewhat nervous about that. Mm. So all of this may well have made her protective of her younger sisters. She had four young sisters. There was Cicely, Mary, who died at the age of about 14, probably very upsetting for... Actually, no, I think Mary was the second one, died at the age of about 14, which must have been devastating for Elizabeth. There's Cicely, Anne, and Bridget. Bridget became a nun at Dartford, and there's notes in Elizabeth's accounts for money and presents sent to the convent at Dartford. Her two other sisters, Cicely, Catherine, and Anne, were all in her entourage when she was queen, and she paid their dowries and she maintained them. Mm-hmm. The other interesting thing is, her sort of general interests were very, you know, similar to everybody else of the period. She, you know, she was interested in music, like all, you know, all people of the time. But she also, I've just discovered, was interested in architecture, as the same as her father had been. Well, there was a palace at Greenwich called Placentia, but Henry and Elizabeth did some renovations in the late 1490s, and then there were plans for a whole new palace, Palace of Greenwich, which apparently Elizabeth created a design for herself, which was what it was based on.
Interesting.
So, So she took, you know, an interest in those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Yes, other interests. She had a number of the usual books of hours, but she also had secular books. She was the first generation to meet the printing press. And her parents had both been very supportive of the new technology, and Elizabeth as well seems to have read and owned books.
Well, yeah, sure. Her uncle was one of the first patrons of Caxton, wasn't he, Anthony?
Anthony Woodville, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and the whole Burgundian culture of the late 15th century, which influenced her design for Greenwich, in fact. Had a lot of Burgundian overtones.
Did she ever travel outside of England?
Once she went to Calais. She and Henry went to Calais in 1500. They went to meet Philip, Duke of Burgundy, to reestablish trade relations. Relations with Burgundy had generally been good. Burgundy originally had supported Lancaster, but then Elizabeth's aunt Margaret married the Duke of Burgundy, and Charles of Burgundy had supported Edward IV and helped him regain the throne in 1471. And then during the 1490s, her aunt Margaret was an avid supporter of Lambert Simnel and Perkin Warbeck, and it was only in towards the end of the century that Henry then re-established diplomatic relations. So they visited, they went to Calais in 1500 and met Duke Philip and possibly his wife, Juana, who was later Queen of Castile, Catherine of Aragon's sister.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, and would she have been part of those negotiations to marry Catherine to Henry?
Yes.
Well, to Arthur, yes. Yeah, of course she would have been. Because it was.
Yeah. Yeah, so mothers, queens, it was an important part of their role to negotiate marriages for their children. That was sort of a recognised element of a queen's duty. So she was involved in the negotiations around Catherine's marriage, and particularly the more, external courtesies, you know, the exchanging of letters, the writing to Ferdinand and Isabella, asking about their health and about Catherine's health and recommending that she learn to speak French and drink wine. And she was also involved in discussions about the marriage of her daughter Margaret to James of Scotland. Henry said, whether he was using it as an excuse or whether it was genuinely true, that Elizabeth and his mother had strongly objected to Margaret, Princess Margaret, being married too young, and that he had, you know, he bowed to his wife and his mother's decision that she shouldn't be married before she was 14.
Mm. And that, in part, right, isn't that kind of the story of that Margaret Beaufort put that in there because of her own difficult
pregnancy? Indeed, so. Yes, she'd had a child too young.
Yeah,
yeah.
What was Catherine's relationship what was Elizabeth's relationship like with Catherine? Do we? It wouldn't have been that close because they weren't.
It didn't last very long. I mean, Catherine arrived in November of 1501. She met Elizabeth for the first time the day before her wedding, so on the 13th of November. Then they were all at Richmond Palace for about 6 weeks before Arthur and Catherine went to Ludlow. And when Catherine was obviously widowed the following April, Elizabeth sent messages and sent a litter to fetch her daughter-in-law. There's not a lot of evidence as to what relationship they had in the final year of Elizabeth's life. Catherine was actually in a separate household, as you know, suitable for the Dowager Princess. But no reason to think it wasn't warm. And Elizabeth's last child was named Catherine. Now that could have been for her daughter-in-law or for her sister Catherine.
And where can people find out more about her?
Well, as we mentioned at the beginning, there are lots of books about her nowadays. There's Alison Weir's Elizabeth of York, Amy Licence, Elizabeth of York. She's part of Sarah Gristwood's book Blood Sisters, which is an interesting look at the interrelationships between the queens of the Wars of the Roses, and quite a bit of fiction about her, mm-hmm. though that's fiction.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, great. Thank you again to Melita Thomas for taking the time to tell us about Elizabeth of York. For more information, go to tudortimes.co.uk, or you can also see the resources available on the Englandcast site at englandcast.com. Remember, next week I've got the episode on Edward and Mary's relationships with France, followed by Elizabeth's, not Elizabeth of York, Queen Elizabeth. And then after that, remember, I'm having the 75th episode Facebook Live Coffee Clatch on April the 7th to celebrate 75 episodes. So check out englandcast.com for all the info on that as well. Thanks so much for listening. I will speak with you soon.
Blow, northern wind, a sandful may be sweating. Blow, northern wind, blow, blow, blow. Ich hot a board in Bauerbricht, at Sully Samley's on sea. Men's cool maiden of nicht, fair and freight of wonder. In all this world, Felicia won a board of blood and of bone. Never yet in Ulster known, not somewhere in London. Blow, northern wind, sinful may be sweating. Blow, northern wind, blow, blow, blow. Here is Daryl Worth in Die, Grazius, a Stoughton guy.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.